So I think that for the most part, you're going to see a lot of leveraging of credentials. You're going to see a lot of looking for misconfigurations. Because think about it. I mean, even if they're criminals and they want to make money, they're still human. They still want the easy way out. If you make yourself a hard enough target, they're going to pivot off of you and they're going to go to somebody else. And I mean, and if enough of us do that, it makes for a really, really tough day for a cyber criminal.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Defenders Podcast, where we talk to the people who keep the internet safe. These industry experts share their innovative cyber defense technologies, vital insights into threats, and predictions for the future of cybersecurity. My name is Christopher Luft. I'm one of the co-founders of Lima Charlie, and I will be your host. This podcast is brought to you by Lima Charlie, maker of the SecOps Cloud Platform, infrastructure for SecOps where everything is built API first. Scale with confidence as your business grows. Start today for free at limacharlie.io. Now let's get into it. My guest today is Chris Cochran. Chris is a field CISO and vice president of AI security at SANS Institute, where he focuses on preparing organizations for the emerging risks at the intersection of cybersecurity and artificial intelligence. His work centers on AI governance, agentic threat preparedness, and integrating safety and security into a unified discipline. Chris is a former U.S. Marine and has held roles across the Marine Corps, NSA, U.S. Cyber Command, the U.S. House of Representatives, Mandiant, and Netflix. Throughout his career, he has focused on understanding adversaries, building high-trust teams, and translating complex technical challenges into clear strategies for leaders. In addition to his work at SANS, Chris contributes to global standards efforts, including security work connected to the EU AI Act through OWASP, and leads executive education on cybersecurity and AI strategy. He also writes and speaks regularly on AI security and emerging risk. Today, we'll talk about how AI is reshaping the threat landscape, what organizations should be doing now to prepare, and how leaders can navigate the era of autonomous adversaries. Hey, Chris, how you doing, sir? It's great to see you again.
Doing great. Always good to see you. Good to hang out again.
Yeah, that was a bit of a mouthful getting through that. So
that was my fault. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of acronyms in this business. We do a weekly news segment, and I often get tripped up trying to like get through all the threat actor names and the different acronyms we put in front of technologies. So
yeah, for sure.
So I'm super excited to talk about our subject today. It's something that's definitely impacting the way we work at Lima Charlie and pretty much everybody everywhere, I think. So yeah, you ready to dive in?
Let's do it.
So I guess my first question, because it's fairly recent for me, but like, when did you first realize AI was going to reshape security? I know when we first saw it pop up, there was a lot of skepticism, a lot of people just sort of thinking this was a marketing thing like we've seen in the past. Right. But in not too distant past, I think a flip switched. Is that your experience?
Yeah, I would say I was probably one of the early adopters for artificial intelligence. So my senior thesis in college was on digitizing the human brain. I mean, I at that time, I didn't understand the math. It was very much, hey, this is what the future could look like. I actually reread it a few months ago. And there's a couple of things I got right. Of course, there's a lot of stuff I got wrong, but we're not going to talk about that part. We'll just talk about how brilliant I am at predicting the future. No, I'm just kidding. And then I would say the first time I was actually on stage speaking about artificial intelligence was actually December of 2019 at the AI Summit in New York. And so even then, it was still very, very early stages. Got into generative first when images started coming about. And oh man, you should see some of these images that I made. I keep them almost like this ugly hall of fame just to show where the progression has gone from the beginning to where it is today. And then I would say when things immediately clicked was, of course, when it clicked for a lot of other folks, when GPT 3.0 came out. I mean, that as soon as I saw that, I was immediately thinking about what are the implications from a cyber perspective, both on a utilization standpoint, like how are things going to change? How could I use this? Like, you know, my big background, my original background is threat intelligence. And so I'm like, oh, wow, I could have used this to help with report writing, et cetera. And then I would say it wasn't too long after that where I started thinking about what are the security implications. And then that really came to the forefront once agents started coming around, operating, trying to figure out and how do you wrangle all that stuff. And so that's what I've been focused on for the last couple of years. But I would say pretty early on, I knew it was going to change things.
Yeah, me too. I think I built my first RAG system about 3 years ago. So I've had an early interest, but I do think like maybe 6 to 8 months ago, like there was a bit of a holy shit moment where it became clear that this was going to be able to replace some of what humans are doing and have a big impact versus just sort of like a fancy chatbot.
Right. Yeah.
So from your perspective, what's the biggest misconception the cybersecurity world, the AI safety world, and the AI risk world have about each other?
Oof, that's a great question. So one of the big things, because I love AI safety. Number one, the word AI safety tends to come with some baggage, even though I think it's the right word to use. I think people have these preconceived notions of what AI safety is. I would say for the most part, the biggest misconception is that it's all theoretical and it's all academia. But folks from academia are starting to move into operations as we speak. There are tons of organizations that are moving people from academia to action. Organizations like Blue Dot, the Center for AI Safety, a lot of good organizations out there. And the big thing that I'm actually working on is the fact that the folks in AI safety, they're like, oh, wow, we need more people. There aren't a lot of people that have our skill set. But then if you think about it, cybersecurity practitioners are the perfect type of number one mentality, but then also the skills themselves to take on some of this AI safety work. And so I think those are, you know, some of the misconceptions. One is that it was all academia, and two, that AI safety and security are separate. I think they're really two sides of the same coin, because if you're leveraging artificial intelligence inside your organization, I mean, there are going to be some safety concerns you need to consider. And of course, there are security concerns, and sometimes they overlap.
I liked how you mentioned people moving from academia into operations, because I think it's very true on the threat actor side too. We've seen some very high level APT style attacks that have leveraged AI, but I think the thing that gets overlooked in a lot of this is just the bars getting lower and lower. You know, we have this sort of agentic support for people who maybe aren't super technical, combined with the cybercrime as a service type businesses. Mm-hmm. And you know, the sophistication of attacks might not be accelerating super fast, but the breadth of them, I think, is coming in a wave.
And actually, that's the title to one of my talks that I've been given lately is The Calm Before the Storm, Preparing for Automated Attacks. Because, yeah, you're right. A lot of the actual steps themselves, the kill chains themselves, aren't really that different. I mean, the only difference that you're starting to see is when you actually attack AI itself, that might change a little bit. But when you're thinking about your classic intrusions, you're thinking about classic breaches, it's all the same thing, but the automation is just that much faster. The scale is that much stronger. I mean, I think we're in this calm where autonomous attacks are in a really nascent stage. I mean, Anthropic came up with their report and they said that this actor was able to automate, I think it was like up to 90% of whatever their work was. But I think eventually there's going to be a time where you can kind of set agents from an adversary standpoint, and they're just going to continue to knock on doors until they find one that's open. So I think that from our perspective, we have to do a bunch of things. Number one, we have to get our own houses in order, right? There are all these fundamental things that people have a hard time getting to. I would say now is really the time to start to batten that stuff down. The reason why I mentioned that, so SSH Stalker just came out not too long ago, but it's leveraging old school vulnerabilities from like 2009. And I'm sure a lot of these machines are machines that people have forgotten about. They're machines that probably aren't doing anything from an operational standpoint. But that's the point, is that I think there are machines that people have forgotten about. And if you have a machine that's under your responsibility and it's just sitting there by itself, it could be a launching off point for an attack. So I would say, like, really start to get the the foundations finally in order for everybody out there. Figure out how do you leverage AI to make your security operations more effective, more efficient, and then really understand that once you're starting to leverage artificial intelligence, how do you protect the AI itself from attack?
Yeah, that's super interesting. You bring that up too. I wasn't aware of the, what was the SSH?
Yeah, SSH Stalker. Actually, yeah. Just did a request for comment for CSO online about it. But yeah, I mean, it's all old tricks. They still work.
Yeah, we just covered a group called Team PCP, which is actually attacking Kubernetes clusters with like a CVE from like way back in 2025 that should have been patched, but they've sort of automated it and having a huge impact just because they're able to automate all of that scanning and penetration. So. Mm-hmm. So when an attacker uses agentic AI end to end, what does a normal intrusion look like in that world?
Yeah, so it's funny. I did a hackathon with this group. My entire team was in London. I was the only one that was stateside. What we wanted to do is we wanted to see if there was a way to create a honey net specifically for AI agents. And the first thing you have to do is like, how do you decide what is agentic, what is normal automation, and then what looks like manual. So we did some of that fingerprinting work. And but that's what's going to be interesting, because when you're setting up detections, and I'm sure in some sense you don't care who it is, you just want to be able to stop that attack. But for the folks that are looking at it from a more information or intelligence, you are probably going to want to know, like, what does the difference look like? And from my perspective, when you have someone that's manual, of course, they're moving at human speed. They might have some, you know, small scripts and things like that they run, but you can pretty much get the human rhythm. Old school automation is fantastic. And in fact, it's probably a little bit faster than agentic, because when you have automation, you know exactly which steps you're moving into.
Yeah.
Right. There is no guessing or prodding around or trying to figure things out. So, but then in that situation, if there's a problem in the automation, or if there's a step that it wasn't intending, it breaks, like the automation breaks. But when you look at agents are moving at machine speed a lot faster than a human can, maybe not as fast as automation, because it's actually still trying to go through reasoning and figure out what are the doors that I need to knock on, what are the windows I need to look into to see if I can break in. Mm-hmm. So I would say that those are some of the differences that I'm looking at.
That's an interesting footprint. And you've given me an idea. I think I'm going to look at if I can create a prompt injection honeypot.
Yeah, do it.
Right? Cool. That's pretty fun.
Hey, it's Nicole from the Lima Charlie marketing team. Many security teams deal with tool sprawl, dozens of different solutions that create gaps in visibility and slow down response times. Our SecOps cloud platform consolidates your security stack into a unified platform where everything works together. Lima Charlie gives you comprehensive endpoint visibility and automated response capabilities in milliseconds instead of minutes, so you can stop threats before they spread across your environment. Try our scalable infrastructure for your security services for free at limacharlie.io.
In the early wave of autonomous campaigns, do you think we're more likely to see attackers abusing misconfigurations and identity, or do you think it's more like spawn camping on 0 days?
I think it's going to be a blend of all of the above. I think whenever you're thinking about like 0 days in the classic sense, I mean, criminals are going to do what criminals do. And the number one motivation from my standpoint is monetary. And so you're not going to waste a 0 day that you could sell on the market doing something frivolous. So I think that for the most part, you're going to see a lot of leveraging of credentials. You're going to see a lot of looking for misconfigurations. Because think about it. I mean, even if they're criminals and they want to make money, they're still human. They still want the easy way out. Even if, and this is what I tell people when it comes to securing your infrastructure, when it comes to getting the foundation sort of set, is that if you make yourself a hard enough target, they're going to pivot off of you and they're going to go to somebody else. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and if enough of us do that, it makes for a really, really tough day for a cyber criminal. I was going to say,
you don't have to outrun the bear. You just have to outrun your friend.
Exactly. You don't have to outrun the bear. I'm hopeful that everybody can outrun the bear, but if you got to make a choice, you got to make a choice. But I'd say we're going to see a lot of misconfiguration scanning. We're going to see a lot of credential stuffing type stuff. And then every so often, I do think we're going to start to see some of this zero-day vulnerabilities that may have not been found by humans for quite some time.
Yeah, and I think I misspoke there. I didn't mean like 0 days, although I have seen a lot of them being surfaced by AI recently, which is really interesting. I meant sort of like spawn camping on when those things get released. So we launch a CVE today, and then just the speed at which people are able to take advantage of those. I already have seen stats of pre-AI where it's like, you know, we're talking hours, and I wonder if that gets down to minutes, right?
Oh, it'll be a lot quicker. Because I mean, once you have the information, that's what the agents are good at. They're good at taking information and moving at machine speed through execution and decision making. So it's going to be really, really, really incessant from my perspective.
Yeah. Have you had a chance to look at OpenClaw at all? Do you have any thoughts on these kind of systems out in the wild?
Yeah. So I have a lot of thoughts around that. So I've been tracking the OpenClaw stuff. I've been tracking the Moltbook stuff. And what's interesting about it, the technologist in me is like, wow, that is awesome. I would love something that I could put on my machine and I could just connect all my stuff to, and it can truly operate like an agent. But then the security person in me is like, oh my gosh, what have we done?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of problems you could run into. Indirect prompt injection, of course, is the first thing that most people think about. And then when you think about things like Moltbook, which for anybody that doesn't know what Moltbook is basically the social media for these agents. And there's a mix of actual agents, and then I'm sure there are, you know, people are actually just pushing content up there, making it seem like the bot overlords are taking over. But one thing I think about is, if I'm sending my bot, if I'm sending my agent to this cesspool of a social engagement site, what prompt injection, what indirect prompt injection or direct prompt injection might I be dealing with, right? Because if it's connected to all of my stuff and it can freely just go to the social media site and it's reading everything, who's to say that it's not going to read something and something's going to, it's going to snap, or it's going to take something as like an instruction and then come back into my environment and, you know, take all my API keys, and it's going to take all of my credentials and go send it to somewhere else. So yeah, those are the things that I think about. But from a technology standpoint, it's cool.
Yeah. And I think it brings up an interesting point too around identity. I was at a conference called Sector up in Toronto, Canada, late last year. And one of the keynotes talking was saying that an organization of 10 people now manages around 2,500 identities, I think, and I might be slightly wrong on the scale. But they were saying in the next 5 to 10 years, that's going to be like 2.5 million, like just with the agentic identities in. I think we already do a pretty poor job of managing that. Like,
we do.
How do we find a solution to that? Do we need like a driver's license for AI agents or something like that?
Yeah, I doubt that it'd even get to that point. One thing that I'll say about the identity for agents, I was just traveling around on the West Coast talking to a bunch of organizations about identity for agents. And one of the things that I think about is every agent needs some sort of identity. And I mean, identities come in different flavors. And right now, I'd say there's like three primary ways to deal with identity and like authorization. So number one is sort of like this centralized platform. So you look at Entra, for example. Entra is now supporting agents, which I think is great for all the Microsoft shops out there. And supposedly it's a free thing that you can leverage, which is cool. Then there's like the futuristic decentralized management, where you're looking at verifiable credentials, through the blockchain, which is in the early stages. It's more of like a research thing right now, but a lot of folks are playing around with it. And then I would say the biggest one that people should be leveraging right now that's kind of tried and true is looking at it from a workloads perspective. So through like a spiffy standard, leveraging things like Spire, you'll be able to do like your own attestation. Once an agent spins up, you give it a spiffy ID, and then, you know, you leverage something like OPA or Cedar in order to dictate what this agent can and cannot do. And what I tell people is they say, hey, well, how much freedom should I give it? Should I give it a lot of freedom, a little bit of freedom? My perspective is this: give it as little freedom as you possibly can, and then slowly open up the aperture just to make sure that you're not going to run into any weird logic bombs, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's so funny because I think it, like what you said there, makes a ton of sense, but the human nature, it's so hard once you start playing with mm-hmm. this stuff to see how capable it is, and your mind wants to try the next thing and you're getting all this advantage from it, but you're most certainly opening yourself up to risk. And so it's really about balancing the risk versus the benefit, because there will be other teams that are leveraging it in a riskier way and gaining an advantage, right?
Yep, exactly.
So for the cybersecurity leaders out there, do you have like three AI safety concepts that they should try and understand as they move into working with these tools more?
Safety or security?
Safety concepts.
Okay. On the safety side, I would say number one is that we're taking a probabilistic technology. We're giving it arms and legs. We're giving it access to tools and data. And we're hoping that it doesn't go off the rails. To an extreme, if you really want to understand the internals of a model, let's say you're building your own model, this is where you can start to lean into the world of like mechanistic interpretability. Of course, your mileage may vary. I think Dario Amade said that we could probably see like 3% into the mind of a model. But I would say that, you know, as far as you could go from a mechanistic interpretability standpoint, but even just from a behavioral analysis standpoint, really understand what the model is capable of, put it through its paces, do a little bit of your own red teaming from a, hey, what can this model do in my environment perspective? That's one thing that you can do. Another thing that you could do from a pure safety perspective is adversarial testing. And we think of it as much on the security side as they do on the safety side. So leveraging other artificial intelligence to do the analysis and do some of the monitoring for some of these things. One of the concepts is weak versus strong. So there's this big concern about AI agents, you know, developing too quickly and being too powerful that we can't control them. And so the idea is that you would have a weaker model, one that's easily controlled, and you use that to monitor for any deviation from what it's supposed to do. And then the final thing from an AI safety standpoint, what could it be?
What about being prepared for what I'm sure will eventually come in terms of regulation?
Yeah, so I tell people about that all the time as well, because we're still figuring this stuff out, right? When you think about things like auditing, when you think about governance, risk, and compliance, all of this stuff is brand new. Even the stuff that's already been written, it really doesn't account for a lot of the agentic technologies or the use cases for agentic artificial intelligence. So just be on the lookout. I was actually fortunate enough to write for the proposed standard for the security side for the EU AI Act. So I'm starting to understand exactly how folks are looking at this, because it's a broad spectrum across the entire globe. Some folks are really permissive. Other ones are a lot more locked down. So that's just going to be in flux for a while. I think the way we operate with agents is going to be in flux for a while. I would say this year and next year, there's going to be a lot of normalization that's going to happen.
A lot of our listeners are earlier in their career and trying to figure out how to navigate this stuff. Do you have any advice as far as like where the skill gaps are or where they could start spending some effort to stay relevant as things move forward?
Yeah, I would put it into three different buckets. I would first, how do you utilize AI, right? If you're doing work right now from a security perspective, just similar to how we leverage automation, like what is something that I can offload to artificial intelligence? And of course, you want to really be cognizant about not offloading something really important or things that need to be ultra deterministic. These could be things like summarization, helping you write. It could be enrichment, data enrichment, things like that. So leverage it as much as you possibly can from that perspective. Then start to really think about like, hey, how do I secure artificial intelligence? Whether we're talking about chatbots, how do we secure agent-to-agent communications? How do we secure our MCP servers? All these things, right? Because I feel like, you know, there's even people out there that are saying that software is dead. Like classic software is going away and it's never coming back. It's not, I don't think it's going to go that far. I think it'll be somewhere in the middle where you will have some classic software, but there will be a lot of agentic AI work. So from my perspective, a lot of the things that we're going to be securing in the future will be, agentic in nature. So start to learn, you know, go to OWASP, top 10 for agents and start to pick through those things and do some experimentation. And then of course the governance side. And now, the folks that are earlier on in their career, maybe they aren't going to be dealing with governance so much, but I still think it's good from understanding what does, number one, a company want to do with artificial intelligence. So then you can understand like, okay, this is what they're trying to do. This is what the technology looks like, but here's how we're going to be able to secure it and enable the company to be able to do these things. So I would say if they can really bucket their development in those three flavors, I think they're going to be in a great spot.
Awesome advice. And I really like the last one around governance, because I think, you know, as security practitioners, it's really easy to get focused on the mission in a very narrow way. But ultimately, the goals of the company and ultimately revenue for the company is what determines whether anybody has a job or not. So if you're able to get in the path of supporting the company and its larger mission, then you become an invaluable asset.
100%.
Awesome. Okay, so we're close to the end here. I'm going to ask you the question I ask of everybody that comes on the show, and I think we've probably touched on it a little naturally through this conversation, but it can be as wide or as narrow as you want. Do you have any predictions for the future of cybersecurity?
Whew.
Yeah. Yeah, people love it when I drop this one on them.
I would say the one thing I'll say, and it kind of alludes to the beginning of the conversation, that we're in this like calm before the storm. I think that cybersecurity isn't going away. I don't think that we're going to be able to legitimately completely outsource level one, level two, level three work to AI from my perspective. I think that even if we have a person that's all their job is to babysit these level one agents, right? You still need someone that's in the mix, in the loop, being able to say, hey, this is what good looks like. This is what bad looks like. Mm-hmm. The other thing that we need to think about is from a development perspective, if we legitimately outsource all of our level one work to artificial intelligence and we don't have anyone that's monitoring and making actual decisions and accepting risk, where do our level twos come from in five years? Where do our level threes, our leaders? We're going to have like this really weird gap if we don't think on a longer time horizon. So I would say that we can run into trouble if we don't do things the right way. But I think the more people talk about these concepts, the more people start to get into the mindset of like, okay, sure, we can work faster. We could be more efficient, more effective. We can scale, but we still need a human component to each of these equations to make sure that number one, we can continue operations and forever. And then also making sure that we have that human touch, even if we leverage machines for a lot of the heavy lifting.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for sharing this with us today, Chris. It was a fun conversation. And yeah, I'm just, I'm in awe of what I'm seeing happen every day. And I'm excited and a little bit scared to see where we end up in the future.
You and me both, man. I'm here for it. I'm, hopeful that we'll be, continuing down the right track. And then I'm here as a resource for anybody that is trying to figure out this stuff with agents.
Okay. What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Number one place is LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on there. I'm sure, we could drop the link wherever folks are listening to this. But the number one place I operate is LinkedIn. I drop articles, posts all the time.
Awesome. Well, thanks very much, sir.
Thank you.
Take care. And that brings us to the end of another great conversation. You can support our show by sharing your favorite episode with a friend, subscribe, give us a rating, or leave a comment on your favorite podcast platform. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can join our community forum at community.limacharlie.io. Thanks for listening in, and we'll see you on the next one. The Cybersecurity Defenders podcast is hosted and produced by Christopher Luft. The show is co-produced and edited by Sam Blake with graphics by Amr Al-Khatib. Sponsored by Lima Charlie, scalable infrastructure for your security services. Visit limacharlie.io to get started for free.